Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. South Florida's clean water crisis often focuses on large-scale topics like Lake Okeechobee, but Southwest Florida water watchers say that conservation really has to start small and focus on the health of ponds, lakes, and canals that dot the landscape across our region. Joining us today to talk about healthy ponds and how that trickles down or up to healthy lakes, rivers, and ecosystems is Dr. Serge Tomas, an environmental studies professor at FGCU. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you.
Also joining us today is Dr. Ernesto Lasso de la Vega with the Pond Watch Program at the Lee County Hyacinth Control District. He works in public outreach and education to help homeowners and community members take charge of local ponds and waterways. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We are talking with pond watchers and clean water experts on how the health of your local pond plays into the overall health of South Florida waters. Do you have questions about a pond problem where you live? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So first, Dr. Tomas, with FGCU, you say you started your career as an oceanographer, but what caused you to switch from the big, vast ocean to the humble little pond?
Well, the real reason is that, I see the ocean being messed up very often with pollutants, and I think that the best way to fix it is actually to look upland, right, and to control these nutrients. And that's why I became, so from an oceanographer, I became a limnologist, meaning I work on ponds and rivers and wetlands so I actually can fix the problem before the nutrients get exported, especially the nutrients get exported downstream.
Yeah, everything rolls downhill, so you're looking at the top of the hill to see where that source is.
That's correct.
Well, so that makes sense. So how many ponds are we actually talking about between Lee and Collier County?
Well, for a census we made in 2012 with students, we counted about 10,000 ponds between Lee and Collier County. And when you put them all of them together, that's about the surface area of the Caloosahatchee River, actually 1.5 times. So it's not a small footprint. And, you know, since 2012, we had a lot more ponds being built. So I don't know what that number is now, but
yeah, like how many of those are naturally existing ponds?
Actually, we don't have that many natural lakes and ponds in South Florida, in Southwest Florida. Mm-hmm. They're mostly man-made built.
So why do we have so many little ponds?
Well, they actually are made generally for as a water treatment since 1982. So basically, they are, I would say, a line of defense so that they would capture the runoff that has nutrient and pollutant, and they would treat that water. And then later on, when they actually are connected to the river, to the canals, they actually will export clean water. And the water is supposed to be clean about 80% of its pollutants. So that's one way to look at it. And the other way is that because builder actually have the option to have a wet pond, which is a pond that has water all the time, or they can actually have a dry pond, meaning that it will dry during the dry season and you will have more like a wetland. But they lack the open water. Right, so especially my student did actually a study, and they found that when you have a lake view property, like I say lake here because that's how they call them, mm-hmm. Then your property value increased by about 10 to 15%. So there is it's a very appealing to the people to actually have a lake view property, and they also make the shape of these ponds very convoluted so you can put more people all around.
Yeah, they don't really look – they're not round.
Most of the times are not.
Fingers sticking off and things like that.
Correct.
So when you see a builder building a new neighborhood and you see all these little ponds going in, the point of those ponds is really to filter that water through and then to have cleaner water exit. Is that happening?
It's happening even though I would say from my research, I work in stormwater treatment areas, which are, you know, areas south of Lake Okeechobee, which are natural filter. You know, wetlands are natural filters because the plants and the algae are attached. When you actually have a pond, I would say that it's not as good because when you have nutrients loading into the pond, you're actually building what we call phytoplankton, so suspended algae. And the suspended algae can eventually be exported outside the pond when there is, for example, an overflow. My recommendation each time we have a pond is actually to limit any kind of nutrient that would reach the pond by using different means. Or we can talk about it later, but we have a lot of plants around the pond that would filter the water. We have eventually rain garden, which are little troughs where we actually have natural plants that will pick up these nutrients. And anything pretty much that will load the pond with nutrients is not a good thing. So we want to limit as much as possible.
So, Ernesto, with Pond Watch, you say that the big problem now is these retention ponds, they're now supposed to be part of a pretty landscape. And to be a good filtering pond, can it also be pretty at the same time?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do they? But people want to have it clear and be able to see right out there. Do you have to have tall?
Correct. Well, that's a misconception. Most people bring the idea from north, probably, that where the ponds are no vegetation, or if they have a pond that they don't want to see any vegetation, is because they want to avoid probably nuisance, wild animals that they might attack you. So, but then in reality, those littoral plants, which are the plants around the pond, they are the ones who are doing the greatest thing to the pond. It's filtering nutrients, they're providing habitat, and they're making the things look a lot better than just having nothing around the pond.
It's kind of like the perception of what looks good versus what, you know, from person to person.
Correct. They need to go outside and look a little more about what is Florida about, because Florida is full of plants. I mean, there's plants everywhere. So we have to kind of adapt those ponds to look like wetlands that are naturally in Florida.
Mm-hmm. So you're with the Hyacinth Control District.
Correct.
What's hyacinth?
Hyacinth is an exotic plant that was introduced in the 1800s. It was it's native of South America, but when it came here as an ornamental and people took it as a beautiful plant, it tend to grow and outgrow all the native plants. So it's a floating plant that you see it with a beautiful flower, and that's the reason why it became so attractive, because the flower is gorgeous.
Does it look like a lily pad?
No, it's actually a floating bulb, and it has a lilac flower, and it just is absolutely beautiful. It's actually in the logo of the Lee County Hyacinth Control District. And the reason why the Hyacinth Control District was created is because the mosquitoes can actually be protected by this hyacinth. And then so we try to control the hyacinth. And by controlling that, you also control mosquitoes.
Okay. And the hyacinth is pretty prolific?
Yes.
It does really
They have no enemies, so they grow and outgrow. And they
have become like a little hot tub for mosquitoes.
Yeah. It actually will hide. Yeah. Lee County was seriously, the Caloosahatchee was covered with this hyacinth, and for a long time it was really overgrown with hyacinths. Now we have it under control, so most people don't know what a hyacinth is.
How do you control it? You just pull it out?
Well, the easiest and most economic feasible way to do it is by chemical control. But there has been some tries at mechanical control, and they're also using biological. There's a bug who comes and they eat and they stress the plant, so the plant doesn't produce so much flowers and filaments. So we can control that. So it's kind of like an integrated plant management.
Wouldn't it be great if we could train some of these pests to like the invasive species so we wouldn't have to deal with them as much?
You know, people thought about
manatees. Get that psyllid off the citrus and get it to go onto these. No. That would be wonderful.
It's very hard.
So when people look at ponds, they kind of want them to be crystal clear. Is that even possible in a healthy pond?
Well, most of them are. And in fact, the only reason why it became turbid is when they have, like Serge was saying, that was a lot of nutrients coming in and then planktonic algae takes over. But if you have a good balanced pond with plants that are underwater and plants that are littoral plants, and you have a good balance, the nutrients will be removed by these microscopic plants and microscopic algae that it will take it. People just don't want to see the plants who are the filtering, because sometimes they call it scum. And the scum is like surface in the top of the water.
Is that the little green stuff that floats up?
Yeah, floats up. But that stuff is filtering a lot of nutrients. And sometimes it's good, not just for the nutrient removal, but also for other animals, birds, little insects, fish. They like that.
Yeah, and then the little fish kind of hide under there, and then the birds can get them because birds are gifted that
and
way.
I have to admit, it's sometimes very unpleasant, and it looks bad. And then sometimes when it grows in excess, it's bad too, because it can kill fish as well, because it removes all the oxygen of the water. So it's a problem that has to be controlled.
So, Serge, I wanted to ask you, how do you get that balance to go so that you don't have too much of the green scummy stuff, but then you have enough of it that's going to be filtering? How can people fix that?
Okay, so to be able to answer the question, I have to explain a little bit the ecology of these ponds. Basically, in Florida, we have a pond that will turn into an Everglade-like system. When the pond is healthy, paradoxically, it's actually growing tremendous amount of plants and especially algae. And these algae grow on the bottom generally. And the reason they grow on the bottom is because the water is very clear, so there is a lot of light reaching the bottom. And eventually, they come to the surface as scum. But we have good scum and bad scum. And the brown stuff is actually the good stuff. The greeny, blue-greeny stuff isn't the bad stuff.
Oh, is that stuff that arrives because fertilizers have gotten in there?
That's correct. So you know, in the Everglades, we have a system that has adapted to actually thrive on the very low amount of especially phosphorus. So when you're building a freshly built pond through limestone, you know, you're carving the limestone, you're having water, you have actually these natural plants that thrive in the Everglades. And the periphyton, this scum, basically grow on the bottom and you just top it off sometimes. And for people who are not used to see that, they think that, oh my God, I got a problem with my pond. It's full of algae. I got a bloom. Well, first, it's not really a bloom because it's actually a healthy community of several different types of algae that cohabit together and cooperate together to get as much nutrients as possible. The problem is that when people see that, they spray it, right? They don't like it. So they spray. And then if you repetitively spray them, then you eventually have these algae and plant that will decay, release nutrient, and then you will select the bad algae, the algae that actually lack nutrient-rich water. And these algae can be toxic, and they smell really bad when they dry up. And this is what people don't really understand. You know, they see, oh, I got algae, but we have the good algae in Florida that thrive in very, very little nutrient water, very clear water, and the bad algae that also thrive, but with turbid water and more nutrients.
Is there a guidebook somewhere or a person that comes and talks to different communities that have a number of these little ponds about how to handle them correctly? Because I don't know if anybody even knows any of that. And where do they find this kind of information?
Well, I guess Ernesto will be able to answer. But before we get to that, I want to make sure that most of my research actually has been community-engaged scholarship, meaning it was community-funded. I've never been able thus far to get actually money from the state to study these ponds, even though they have a very large footprint, as we've said. So we actually had to create this workshop. And it's a lot of, you know, pro bono work that we do to educate the people. You know, what are the good algae? What is a healthy pond? What kind of plants you can plant around the pond? How do you limit nutrient from getting into the pond? So this is what we're doing right now. And because we don't have really a very good comprehensive plan to actually study these ponds to really understand them, we sometimes a little bit guess because we don't have all of the information.
So you're not really having like a streamlining of information?
Not really, because the main problem that I have is that when I'm hired to study a pond, generally that pond has already problems. So I'm studying only the bad candidate and I'm missing the good candidate.
Yeah, somebody that's functioning well. What does someone do if they want to learn more about how to keep their ponds in good shape in their neighborhood?
There has been an initiative by several professionals in Lee County. I mean, they're talking Lee County Environmental, the Natural Resources, the Charlotte Harbor Natural History Program, Highest and Control District, some professional engineering companies who have put together workshops. And we have tried last year, we were doing a lot of workshops in the county just to educate homeowners about how to manage these ponds. And some of those, we created a wet plan. It's the name of our project. It's a name of our group, a wet plan. And we have created a website where we put a lot of this information on that website so people can access that. But these workshops have been distributed around the county just to educate more. The Highest and Control District has another project. It's called Pond Watch. And if people have problems with their pond, they usually end up calling us for us to do something about it. And one of the main things is you have to educate the homeowner about why they're having the problems. Like most of the cases of the sources, the nutrients, fertilizer, maybe some internal cycling of the nutrients. So we're trying to educate them to do something about that, like cut your fertilizer or start learning a little bit about the pond. And that's where Pond Watch comes in place, where we are educating the homeowners how to manage your pond most effectively.
Better. Well, what are three things that average Joe homeowner can do starting today to make their pond better?
Well, starting today.
Because we're going into rainy season. Is
exactly.
That going to have an impact?
From June 1st to September 30th. That's it. That's when the fertilizer ordinance is taking place in Lee County and in many other counties in Florida, because that is the time when the rainy season will be running, washing a lot of the fertilizer you apply, and it will go right into the pond. Mm-hmm. So the first thing, you follow this ordinance, trying to look at what are the restrictions about how much to put, what kind of fertilizer do you have to put if you're ever going to fertilize outside of this blackout. Because this June 1st to September 30 is the blackout. You're not supposed to fertilize. And if you're going to fertilize outside, you need to know how much, what to put, and where to put it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that, and then don't spray if you think you have bad algae?
Well,
Or if you think your good algae is
if
bad?
If you have good algae, I would not spray because they actually are highly beneficial for the health of the pond.
So people need to know what good algae looks like.
Correct. And that's actually what my job's been at those workshops is. Also with Greenscape Alliance down in Collier County is to actually educate those people about, you know, there's good algae and bad algae. The other thing that also we found is that, you know, we're talking about the ordinance, is that just before the closing date, you know, that June 1st, people tend to over-fertilize.
Oh, everybody goes out on Memorial Day weekend and throws down
the
fertilizer?
Exactly, and they also use slow-release fertilizer, which eventually will wash down. If you have a big rain after that, you'll wash down to the water, and then they release a nutrient in the water this time because their little pellets, you know, slowly release the fertilizer.
So that's kind of useless in the summer anyway to put that on your lawn.
That's a thought. And then we have other things that I think are really odd. For example, you know, during the dry season, especially for people who are on reclaimed water, that's a discussion we have very often. You know, during the dry season, the grass needs water, but it doesn't need the nutrients because it's not really growing actively. However, when they're receiving reclaimed water, it actually come with the water, but also with the nutrient that comes with it, especially the phosphorus. So you're giving that to your plant, which do not take it. That nutrient actually accumulates during the dry season in the soil, and then during the rainy season, eventually that nutrient washes off.
Oh. Well, we are running out of time. Unfortunately, we have to leave it there, but I do want to thank our guests, Dr. Serge Tomas from FGCU and Dr. Ernesto Lasso de la Vega with the Pond Watch Program and Hyacinth Control. We have links to your website for how you can get involved with taking control of your local pond's health on our website at wgcunews.org. Click on the Gulf Coast Live tab to find out more. But thank you for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.